This is Katie and Kate, Carbondale Community Access Radio, Glenwood Springs, Carbondale, the Roaring Fork Valley, and beyond. I am Will Grambois from the Soper Sun, here bringing you Everything Under the Sun, a little fledgling talk show we got here at 4 on Thursdays. With me in the studio is Raleigh Burley, who you know as the news director of Katie and Kay here.
Hello, hello, hello.
And Megan Tackett, our reporter for the Soper Sun, who may be having trouble with her microphone, I can't tell.
I'm working on it.
Okay. So we're going to chat with you for about a half hour here about what we have in the paper this week and answer any questions you might have. And the number here at the studio, 963-2976. I get that right, Raleigh?
That's right.
Okay. Feel free to call in if you have any comments or questions. Otherwise, I wanted to dive right in, if it's all right with Megan, to the story she tackled this week about disaster preparation, because I think it's an interesting one with some local components that hopefully she can go into.
Yeah, it was a fun one this week, for sure. Just randomly, thanks to Jane Bachrach mostly and her friend group, but we had several Carbondale locals who happened to be in other places in the country where awful disasters or supposed hypothetical disasters were pending. One of which was going to be Laura Bartels. She was taking a retreat out, a Buddhist meditation retreat out to Montecito, California in early January. And, you know, unfortunately, poor California was dealing with all those fires. And so she was already nervous about the possibility of plans having to change. So she signed up for the Santa Barbara alert system so that she would receive any kind of alerts about pending, you know, flash flood warnings, et cetera. And at the time, she was just worried about the fires. So they get out there Sunday evening. She's already receiving early alerts, which allowed her to kind of prepare early. She had created a buddy system. She had created a group text message so that everybody had contact information. She noted that not everybody had a car. So, you know, part of the buddy system was ensuring that everybody had transportation, regardless of their own vehicular situation. And thank goodness she did, because they arrived Sunday night. And I feel my heart goes out to these poor people that were hosting the retreat. They had to hire professional cleaning services and all this stuff because there were a few burn spots on the properties, managed ones. But, you know, there were areas that actually did see fire. And so they had cleaned everything up and gotten everything ready to host this retreat. And then not 24 hours later, they were labeled a mandatory evacuation zone for flash flood warnings. And thankfully, you know, they were able to take care of all of that. The retreat center, La Casa de Maria in Montecito, that I think we have a photograph of in the article in the print edition, you know, they were able to work with a nearby hotel and create accommodations for a group of about 100 people on relatively short notice. So it was pretty amazing, Laura's words, not mine, in that regard. But, you know, It did not go over my head that the meditation retreat was able to remain calm in chaos. But mostly that was because of this alert system and the preliminary actions that Laura had put into place in the event of an emergency. The tragedy in all of this is, if you're in California and you read the LA Times, you know that mudslide resulted in 21 casualties, and at least six of those, they're still tabulating that number, but at least six of those casualties were in voluntary evacuation zones. And if you hadn't signed up for that alert system from Santa Barbara, you didn't receive any sort of alarm until almost an hour after those who had signed up for the system. And unfortunately, it was too late for a lot of people. You know, so that definitely I took to heart, and I found myself signing up for the Garfield County emergency alert system. And I'm glad I did. I'll be interested to see how that works, which leads me to kind of the next narrative there is, I spoke with Karen Glenn. She and her husband split their year. Well, not quite split. Technically, I think they do 7 and 5 months, but they were in Honolulu when the now pretty famously false alarm went out about a missile defense system. And, you know, what Karen told me was she and her husband had thought a lot about tsunamis, right? Because that's, or hurricane, that's something that you can respond to. If, you know, North Korea was sending over missiles, it's kind of like, well, I guess I've had a good life, right? But again, because she had thought of that, they actually kept canned foods and extra water supplies on hand specifically in light of a disaster. They'd had that conversation. So they weren't as panicked when they received an alert. And they also had kind of a unique situation in that they live on a 27th floor of a high-rise building. So they had a view of the outside world. And they were able to see, wait a minute, the surfers are still surfing. The, you know, sirens aren't going off. There was no activity at the airport. So they were already suspicious that maybe this wasn't what, you know, they had received. But better safe than sorry. And, you know, they were able to have a relatively calm mentality about it, but not everybody did. You know, I wasn't able to write everything I wanted to for this piece, but Karen was telling me really sad anecdotes of, you know, parents putting their children in the sewers because that was the nearest underground option. You know, they had tunnels backed up where people who were in the car driving when they received the alerts in a panic. So they just drove to the nearest tunnel and held out there. You know, she expressed a little bit of frustration with the raid tests that they do every month. In December, she told me that, you know, they did a test and most of them worked and people received the intended alert. Some of them sent out incorrect messages. And then two of them, she recalled, actually started playing Christmas carols. So, you know, it's a buggy system and something that you would want to put a lot of faith into. But it made me think, you know, what is it that we can do here locally? And we are very fortunate. Garfield County has a pretty dialed in emergency alert system. And a lot of our larger establishments are dialed in. You know, Carbondale Rural Fire Department in 2015 went to Rifle and sent a lot of people out for this FEMA training. That it was one of the biggest trainings that FEMA has done on site since. You know, CMC has undergone a lot. I think in August 2016, they did a drill that worked out really well for them. So we're really lucky here that we've got it dialed in, but definitely lessons to be learned from others' experiences.
So what would those be? I mean, what would you suggest to a listener that they undertake to be prepared either in a false alarm or in a true potential disaster?
Yeah, a couple of things. You know, we've got a sidebar. You and I, Will, talked a lot about if we were going to pack a go bag, what would be in that go bag, you know. But before you have a go bag, you need to have an idea of where you would go. So having a plan that's been well communicated with your loved ones as to, okay, if I had to leave home, but it's okay to stay within Carbondale in the event of a fire or carbon monoxide or something, you just need to get out of your home. Where's your place to meet? If you need to leave the city, where's your place to meet, et cetera. And you can kind of go out from there. Having a printed document in the world of cell phones, you know, I'm very embarrassed. I'm sorry, honey. I don't know that if I was panicked and stressed out, I would accurately recall my fiance's cell phone number, right? So having a printed document with important contact information and insurance policies is important to have, right? You know, one of the things that Karen talked about was getting online and the local newspaper website was down. So, you know, you can't assume you're always going to have access to information. Then, you know, make sure you've got all the basics in that go bag. You know, a lot of the people in California who had to flee the fires had nothing but the clothes on their backs. So having non-perishable foods, having a can opener to open said non-perishables, having extra water, and that includes for you and your four-legged ones if you have pets. You know, Sonny would definitely have to have his own separate dog food and water. And they suggest that any go bag supplies that you put together anticipate 72 hours of having to really base that. So clothes, you know, any medications that are essential, make sure you double check your expiration dates, but and non-essentials too, just even aspirin, basic first aid kits, bandages, things of that nature. Having something in your home to grab is great. Having something in your car is probably better because what if you can't get home? So yeah, having that go bag that's ready to go of thinking, okay, if I only had 72 hours, what, you know, and this is what I've got, making sure that your basic life essentials are in place and having a way to meet up with the people that you want to be with, and that is important. So those are the big things. And then the other thing is, you know, get online, and I forget exactly what I Googled.
It's I've got article. It written down, the GARCO911.org.
Rally, it's like you do this for a living. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, I thought it was really useful because I had no idea what that was until I read your article.
Right?
And now I know how to be prepared.
Thanks. I didn't know what that was either until I started Googling after talking to Laura and her experience in Santa Barbara. Signing up to receive those alerts, I don't think I can overstate how important that is.
So GARCO911.org. And you mentioned that a lot of people have landlines and that when they send out alerts, they'll kind of ping it by location, but maybe you kept your out-of-state number or you've never registered your cell phone with GARCO. So less and less people are using their landlines, which makes that system less and less relevant unless people sign up online.
Yeah, the FCC is increasing requirements for cell phone location data, but it's not in place yet. And Carl Stevens, who I spoke with from GARCO911.com, expressed a lot of frustration. So be sure, if nothing else, lead with your location. If you have to call or text 911 in an emergency setting, more important than anything, get your location, because you know your location information based off cell phone pings could be anywhere from 50 to 300 meters, and that is a huge difference.
The other thing about the emergency alert system, Garfield County doesn't send them out very often. They every once in a while, you maybe get a winter storm warning or something. Pickin County, however, is actually pretty assertive with theirs. They're great at keeping you informed about road closures, about kind of anything that might affect you. So if you're commuting up to Aspen every day, even if you don't live in Pickin County, that's a great system to be on. It's something that I use to keep up to breast as a reporter. I think, Megan, you mentioned this to me earlier. If you're going on vacation, it's not a terrible idea to sign up for the emergency alert system there. It may seem a little like overcautious, but as Laura's experience proved, it can make all the difference in the world.
Absolutely. And you know, storms are getting more and more intense. I feel like every natural disaster is the most intense on record, you know, so Be aware. I think the way Laura phrased it, she wouldn't have normally thought of that, except she was in a leadership role for that retreat. Now that she has adult children, she's actively on them about, hey, if you're going somewhere, you are local for that time being. So be aware.
Mm-hmm. The other thing, you mentioned the newspaper website being down, and that's something that I think about as a journalist, is how am I going to get information out to folks in the case that, say, you know, the internet and the phones go down, which is something we've had happen twice here. One thing that I'm really thankful for in this town, and I'm going to let Raleigh speak to this if he wants to, is KDNK, because I really can't overstate the ability to get breaking news and essential information out at this station pretty much 24/7. I mean, Raleigh, do you have that sense as the news director?
Yeah, you know, it's a pretty proud moment when we receive an update, possibly from the Pickin County alert system, about an accident or something along those lines, and we are able to get that information to the DJ in the booth to announce immediately to anyone who's listening, which makes KDNK essential that you have it turned on all the time.
I know I tuned in the last time we were without internet or cell.
Well, and I think that in the case of a real natural disaster or a situation, there's a good chance the Soap or Sun staff would be working from here. I don't know if that's our official policy, but I imagine it as a high likelihood.
Well, speaking of KDNK, support for KDNK comes from Roaring Fork Transportation Authority. Online bus schedules and routes at myrfta.com. The MyRafta bus tracker gives real-time information for all routes throughout the valley. Info at myrfta.com. And underwriting on KDNK is an effective way to market your business, reach your friends and neighbors in the Roaring Fork Valley and beyond with KDNK's reasonable underwriting packages. Email greg@kdnk.org.
Support comes from Harmony Scott Jewelry Design, offering a local shopping experience in downtown Carbondale. Handmade, limited edition jewelry, voted locals' favorite since 2001. Gifts for everyone from the town you love. Gallery at 199 Main Street or online at harmonyscott.com. You're tuned to KDNK, Carbondale Community Access Radio, Glenwood Springs, Carbondale, the Roaring Fork Valley, and beyond, streaming worldwide at kdnk.org. This is Everything Under the Sun, a little talk show we're doing with the Soper Sun, myself, Will Grandbois, reporter Megan Tackett, and today we're thankful to have with us KDNK News Director Raleigh Burley. I'm going to seize the opportunity here to do a little self-promotion. We have announced this week our classic movie night for the year, Some Like It Hot, the 1959 comedy. That's going to take place on February 26th. It's a Monday at the Crystal Theater. Doors are open around 7, and the showtime should be 7:30. Planning on a $10 ticket price there. That's going to support your Carbondale Community Connector, our little nonprofit newspaper. And I also think it's going to be a gas. You know, if you read my column this week, you can see what we went through trying to figure out what we were going to show. We talked about so many different possibilities and considered so many different factors, but really what made Some Like It Hot win out was just it's purely enjoyable. It has some messages to offer and some context to give to the struggles we deal with today and what they looked like back in 59 when the Hays Code was still technically in effect. I think it's just a fun film. I had the chance to screen it a few weeks back with our board member Debbie Brule and her family, and we all enjoyed the heck out of it. So I hope to see that theater full in a month here and everybody laughing.
Yes, it's a 1959 romantic comedy starring Marilyn Monroe, and it passes the Bechdel test, which you'll find out if you read the column. What that is, if you don't know already. But I like that you chose kind of a feminine theme, going with the momentum that we've built from the Women's March, which made the front page, beautiful photographs from Jane Bacharach, a number of them throughout the paper. In case you missed the march, really puts you there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had a chance to catch up. I attended the march along with Jane. Jane got a great photographs of Jane Bacharach. That's our photographer. I think Raleigh mentioned that. Got great photographs of the experience. And then I caught up with Alice, the magazine, after the fact, and spoke with their editor about what was kind of different this year. It did seem like it was not just a duplicate of the first year. The context has changed. There was some direct sort of opposition to the Trump administration there, but also some general or even specific concerns about women's rights. And this year, kind of the new addition was DACA, and that culminated with a speech that Sandra Lopez, who's in Sanctuary here in Carbondale with the Unitarians, gave from her front porch there. She's been there since October, so you know, it's a process for her, and she had an opportunity to sort of share what she's been going through and her concerns in the context of some added immigration responses, not directly toward people in Sanctuary, but towards their families and folks who may otherwise have been considered sort of out of the fray. So it was an interesting chance to take a look at a year of political back and forth, changing politics at the top and how people are responding at the local level. You know, there's been a series of marches, and one of them even had a counter march. So I think it's been a positive thing to see people out there and getting their voice out and expressing their opinions, regardless of which ones they are. And on that subject, you know, one thing that I also saw in the march were several signs saying, you know, first you march, then you vote, or first you march and then you run. We've got our own municipal elections coming up, so there's plenty of other chances to get involved. We have 5 people running for 4 trustee seats. It's a huge field. We don't usually have 4 trustee seats open at once. Mayor Dan Richardson then is running unopposed, but there's definitely an opportunity there to get your voice heard as you decide who's going to be running the town for the next few years here. And we're planning to partner with some other organizations, Kitty and Kay, the Chamber, to bring you a candidate forum to give you as much information as you can possibly get on that not too long from now. But that's still in the works.
Yeah, and an interesting aspect of this upcoming local Carbondale election is that the incumbent trustees, none of them have run before. Mm-hmm. So they were all appointed, and this will be the first time that they kind of have to debate. And I know we are planning a forum coming along in March, right? To have everybody get together and speak.
Right at the beginning of the month there. Yeah, because ballots are going to go out on the 13th, and then you'll have until early April to return them. By the way, Kathy Derby over the town clerk has asked me to emphasize there is a 24-hour drop-off box at the town hall now. It has surveillance. It is a perfectly safe place to be heard. You do not have to wait until election day to bring your ballot in.
Mm-hmm. You no longer have to stop by her desk either, and we all know Kathy Derby stays plenty busy, so
she's
a brand
a
new
woman.
Box. We got it last November. Let's make the most of it.
Yeah. So, yeah, what Raleigh brought up about the incumbents, is it's an interesting one. We have a kind of a new board. We've seen a lot of turnover in the last couple years here and a lot of appointments. So I think a lot of the folks that have had a chance to sort of get their feet wet are finding their way, and we're tackling some interesting issues here. You know, just this last meeting, we dealt with the common consumption, which is this possibility that three of the first Fridays this year, you're going to be able to take an alcoholic beverage out of a bar or not, I don't think from the liquor store, but out of the bar and consume it in public and on parts of Main Street. That's been kind of controversial. There's some members of the trustees who are not particularly happy with the precedent that sets, although it's moving forward. And we also talked about the agreement with Aspen Valley Land Trust to purchase a chunk of land at the bottom of Red Hill for potential future parking and trail improvements, and even started the process of getting some easements, or at least one easement, on Industry Place that would let create a new connection between 8th Street and Highway 133. So there's a range of issues going on, even just in one issue, to say nothing of the trash discussion, to say nothing of the bear ordinance that's been, you know, sort of added teeth to it over the last couple of years. So don't underestimate the impact of municipal affairs on your life, on your neighbor's life, and get out there and participate in the process.
One of the things I love about Carbondale, too, is we get to know our neighbors. So, you know, check out who's running for the board, because chances are you already know at least one of them, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's one of the things that we as the Soper Sun really strive to do is introduce you to folks, to the people who are currently here and the people who have been here. We had the great privilege the other day of chatting on the phone with Tricia Bader Binford, who has a whole file of photos to herself in the Valley Journal archives, because she was one of the biggest star athletes that Roaring Fork High School ever saw. And I think a lot of people here remember her and remember the three-peat, the back-to-back-to-back state championships that the girls basketball team achieved in 89, 90, and 91. But there's also probably the majority of listeners and residents of Carbondale who were not around then. So her induction into the CHASA Hall of Fame was an opportunity to sort of bring that back and kind of introduce people who may not have been familiar with her to a chapter of Carbondale history that I think a lot of people take great pride in. School sports, at least my personal bias, they're not just for the students. They're not just for the parents. They're an opportunity to really get out there and support the schools and the kids and what they're doing in a way that's not always possible with academics. I was not a sports kid myself, but I don't know that I would have wanted somebody cheering on my AP Lit test. But it's really a chance to support the kids. So I'll just remind folks that The Rams are playing on Friday night. They'll be hosting Moffat County, I believe. And you get a chance to see the JV, the girls and the boys all play back-to-back and support the Rams. So I think that that's, you know, if you didn't make it down to Denver to cheer Trisha when she got her award, that's the next best thing. That's a chance to keep her her spirit going here in Carbondale.
Yeah, and support for the schools is so important. An essential part of that community connection that you do, you know, not only connecting us to the past, but also to our future by supporting the youngsters who are growing up in our town.
Yeah. I'm curious, Raleigh, anything else that stood out to you about this week's paper that maybe we thought was, didn't make our top three, but.
Well, I think first time ever Katie Dahl feature. I believe it's the first time
ever. That is correct.
For the paper is looking great. So business as usual after the DOJ marijuana announcement, she brings this national issue into a local focus by talking about some of the pot shops here in Carbondale. And there's a lot of great letters. I especially loved Gwen Garcelon's little opinion piece about the Roaring Gardens, which great news is going to remain here. It was about to be pushed out by Polo Field, but then they decided that it's kind of an asset to have an organic farm that produces, I believe it's 5 tons of produce every
wow.
summer.
Yeah.
So not only is it staying, but it's expanding. Great news for Whitney Will and Ben Armstrong, who are managing the farm, and for the town.
Yeah, we were pleased to hear about that. And, you know, my first gut reaction upon Gwen approaching me for a column was, oh, no, that's news. We need to do a story. It sounds like it's still in the process. They're not not everything's nailed down and they're moving forward cautiously. But it was great to be able to share that news in sort of a partial way in this week's paper. So thanks for highlighting that, Raleigh.
Yeah, and I believe Gwen's, this is part two, and I think part one when she spoke out against this development that was pushing out part of the local food movement was a major reason why possibly these people reconsidered and figured, you know what, maybe we don't need to, maybe we can coexist these two things together. So, you know, another great paper, good things happening in the Soprus Sun. You can find copies scattered all around the valley.
We deliver about 4,000 of these from Glenwood to Aspen every week. So, you know, if you don't know where to find one near you, you can go right onto our website at SoprusSun.com, and there's a nifty interactive map to help you out with that. And also, I think you'll see some pretty cool changes on the website in the next week or so here, but we'll tackle that in Everything Under the Sun down the road. Any last thoughts from you today, Megan?
I think this vegetarian's just happy about that garden.
Yeah.
No, it's been a good week. It's been a good week for the town. It was fun to swing by the new Habitat Restore. I got a free sample of a biodegradable anti-stick spray for my top sheet for my skis now that we finally have snow. So hopefully that'll, you know, make my turns even more efficient, as it were. So no, it's been a good week.
Yeah. On the subject of skiing, Ski for Sisu coming up here not far off. We'll be doing a little story related to that next week. Stay tuned and keep reading.
You're listening to Katie and Kay. This is the show Everything Under the Sun, highlighting the Soprus Sun, our local newspaper, and it's going to be every Thursday at 4 p.m. So tune in, hear the highlights from the staff from the Soprus Sun.
Thanks for having us here, and thanks for tuning in. And one of these days, don't be afraid to give us a call at 963-2976.
963-2976. This is a call-in show, so if you have ideas, questions, feel free to call.
All right. Have a good day.
Thanks.